Hello and welcome to another podcast of U.S. History Repeated with Jimmy and Gene. This is Jimmy LaSalle. Today's podcast is a little shorter than usual, and we will make up for that with the next one, which will be a little longer. In any event, this podcast is all about D-Day, the Allied invasion at Normandy. So we're going to jump right in with our resident history expert, Gene Anzanakis. Jeannie, take it away.
Okay, so today we're going to talk about the D-Day invasion. For years, the question of where and how to invade Northern Europe had plagued Allied countries, their leaders, and their military generals. In December of 1943, Project Overlord began to take shape. German military leaders thought the Allies might land at Pas-de-Calais. This was because the Allies had planned an operation known as Fortitude, so that the Axis powers would divert their attention from Normandy. France was the logical choice for an invasion, so there wasn't a large amount of territory to select in order to mislead the Germans. The Allied invasion at Normandy was the largest and the most complex amphibious invasion in history. The naval component was codenamed Neptune. Tens of thousands of troops needed to be moved across the channel, and in total, almost 160,000 Allied soldiers were set to land across five different beaches, which were given the code names of Sword, Juno, Gold, Omaha, and Utah. The actual date of the invasion was pushed back a number of times due to changes in the plan and even weather. Hundreds of thousands of soldiers and 500,000 military vehicles would need to be brought over. The first ships to cross the channel were known as minesweepers. In military operations, it's considered an honor to be sent in first. It's also usually the most dangerous. These ships are designed to remove and to detonate mines. Once the passageway is then deemed safe, other ships can go through. German fortifications were extensive. Erwin Rommel was put in charge of fortifying the northern European coastline in preparation for an Allied invasion. Rommel was away on leave during the morning of the invasion at Normandy. Hitler's Atlantic Wall was 2,400 miles long of fortification. We're talking bunkers, landmines. There were a variety of beach and water obstacles that were put in place. This Atlantic Wall was built between 1942 and 1944, and it spans a distance from Norway all the way to the Spanish coast. Rommel understood the superiority and the strength of the Allied forces after fighting them in other campaigns. To strengthen the Atlantic Wall, Rommel had hundreds of reinforced concrete pillboxes put up to house machine guns, anti-tank guns that were built on beaches and in some cases built in slightly more inland. In order to make the beach landings even more difficult, he had landmines and a variety of obstacles for military vehicles that had been planted on the beaches. And just to give you an idea of how many landmines the Germans put down, just in northern France, there is believed to have been 6 million mines. Major ports essentially became fortresses, and Hitler ordered that they be defended to the very end, even to the death. Rommel believed that if the Allied forces were successful in breaking through the beaches, the fight would be over for Germany. He also didn't live to see the end of the war. He was involved in a plot to assassinate Hitler. He was strong-armed into choosing to commit suicide in order to protect both his reputation and his family. As early as the 1930s, the United States military began looking for ways to safely bring troops from the ships to the beaches. A shipbuilder in New Orleans named Andrew Jackson Higgins modified one of his boats in order to meet the U.S. military's specifications, and it became known as the Higgins boat. These boats were a game changer. It allowed Allied troops to get to shore. This is why the United States World War II Museum is located in New Orleans. The area became essential to the war industry and to the success of the war. To limit Germany's capability to respond to the invasion, there was a widespread bombing campaign against German aircraft production, targeting airfields and different fuel supply locations. All of this was planned and it was spread out in order to kind of continue to deceive Germany from knowing where the precise location of the invasion was going to be. When deciding on the optimal date for the invasion, weather patterns were studied closely. Certain conditions were deemed as being optimal. A full moon, landings would begin at dawn between low and high tide. They wanted the waves to be less than 5 feet high. They wanted cloud cover, but not too much cloud cover. They wanted to have at least 50% visibility. So it's a pretty specific wish list there. Poor weather conditions on June 5th delayed the invasion until the next day, June 6th, 1944. General Dwight Eisenhower was made Supreme Commander of the Allied Forces in Europe. He even threatened to resign his position over disagreements on bombing locations in France in order to weaken the German position. His threat was enough to get the powers that be to sign off on his plan prior to the invasion of Normandy. He was in charge of the operation, which involved 12 nations. On the morning of June 6, 1944, General Eisenhower issued the following statement, and this is a direct quote. "Soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force, you are about to embark upon the Great Crusade, toward which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hope and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you. Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened. He will fight savagely. But this is the year 1944. The tide has turned. The free men of the world are marching together to victory. I have full confidence in your courage, devotion to duty, and skill in battle. We will accept nothing less than full victory. Good luck, and let us all beseech the blessing of Almighty God upon this great and noble undertaking." By the morning of the attack, thousands of paratroopers and glider troops were already behind enemy lines and had secured bridges and exit roads. The amphibious assault began at 6:30 in the morning. The United States took Omaha and Utah. Great Britain took Sword and Gold, and Canada took Juneau. Their goal was to overpower German defenses, take the beach and head inland 25 miles and capture the city. There are 7,000 ships, 13,000 planes, all headed towards the beaches of Normandy with one goal in mind: secure the beach. Soldiers on the landing boats were carrying 60 pounds of gear. They need to maneuver through water and waves. Beach defenses, sand, bullets from machine guns, along with landmines, all while carrying 60 pounds of gear. Thousands of miles away across the United States, churches and synagogues were filled with people praying for the success of the mission and for the safety of American soldiers. At Omaha Beach, one of the American beaches, the casualties were the highest. It took 11 hours to secure that beach. Once the soldiers got to the cliffs, they then had to secure a path that was safe from landmines. If you've ever seen the movie Saving Private Ryan, the beach scenes are so overwhelming. The onslaught is just nonstop. There are 5 machine gunners on the beach. Each can fire 25 bullets a second. Many of the men were so seasick that they drowned and they never even made it to the beach. In the days that followed, Allied forces moved further inland and the death toll continued to rise. The soldiers who landed on the beaches of Normandy were young men, some 18 and 19 years old. The oldest person to land on the beaches of Normandy was Teddy Roosevelt Jr. He was 56 years old, and he died 5 weeks after the invasion from a heart attack. The average age of the U.S. soldier was 22 years old, so it's very much a young man's fight. New military advances like tanks. These tanks were capable of floating in the water. The tanks had propellers, which helped them to move through the water. The goal was to have one of these tanks every 50 yards. The problem is that the waves were higher than the walls and many of the tanks sank. Only really a handful actually made it to the beach. Couple that with the plan to bomb German fortifications on the cliffs failing because of the cloud cover. 13,000 bombs all missed their targets. The men landing on the beach were on their own. Paratroopers faced difficulties because the Germans had purposely flooded the fields, and many of the men landed in water and their harness was difficult to remove, and many of them drowned. U.S. warships were stationed offshore in order to protect the vessels. They began to head towards the shore and engage the heavy German artillery. It provides much needed cover for the soldiers on the beach and the opportunity to actually reach their goal of securing it. They are able to head inland into France, and they begin to liberate the continent from Nazi control. After 5 days of fighting, all five beaches were secured. If you go to Normandy today, those five beaches are still known as Omaha, Utah, Juneau, Sword, and Gold. The bodies of the fallen are buried at cemeteries nearby. The Normandy American Cemetery and Memorial holds the bodies of 9,388 American heroes. 45 pairs of brothers are buried at the cemetery, many of them buried next to each other. One such pair are two of former President Teddy Roosevelt's sons. One was killed in World War II and the other during World War I. His body was exhumed and it was moved there. There are 304 unknown soldiers buried there as well. On the grave markers is inscribed the following: "Here rests in honored glory a comrade in arms known but to God." Grave markers are either a white marble cross or a Star of David. The cemetery covers 172.5 acres. The cemetery covers 172.5 acres and overlooks Omaha Beach. There is a French organization where volunteers go and lay flowers at the grave of a fallen hero when their families living in America are unable to do so. A photograph of the flowers at the grave is then sent to the family. The people who volunteer with this organization, Flowers of Memory, consider it an honor. Similar practices are done in Belgium, where there is a waiting list for individuals to have the opportunity to care for a grave. The incredible sacrifices made by the soldiers who landed on the beaches of Normandy paved the way for city after city, town after town, country after country to be liberated. And we're going to talk more about some of those major battles and how the Allied forces did that in our next podcast episode.
Thank you for listening to U.S. History Repeated with Jimmy and Gene. Tell your friends about our podcast and where you learn all this great stuff about U.S. history. Follow us on social media and get onto our email list to learn about special events. They're coming up again. There's always more to learn. Talk to you soon.